So today I'm talking to Luke Taylor. You're the Liberal Democrat MP for Sutton and Cheam. You are now part of the Lib Dem 33-member front bench with a new role of spokesperson for London. You've recently said on X that you're going to take the government and Sadiq Khan to account. There must be many issues that you want to take them to account on. And also, there doesn't seem to be an equivalent MP in any of the other parties. So you can't speak to Mr. Khan across the dispatch box. Who do you envisage yourself talking to in Parliament?
I mean, it's a very good point. I mean, it's a shame that the other parties haven't recognised the importance that London has as the economic powerhouse. It's the cultural capital of our country. And with all due respect to the other cities in the UK, it's clearly the best place to live. And again, with apologies to the rest of London, Sutton and Cheam, absolutely the pinnacle of London's crown. But I think your point's well made. Who do I speak to? Who do I call to account? Well, all of the issues that we see in London around transport, around education, around sewage in our rivers, they are both subject-based, so they're department-based, but obviously they are specific to London. So I think my expectation is that when we have the Transport Minister talking about funding for projects around the UK, I will be there and making the argument for investment in London's transport systems and how that split the responsibility between TfL and the government. Where we have conversations about education and school funding, I will be there to make the argument for the particular needs of London schools and London students. I think that the Liberal Democrats have made absolutely the right choice and made it very clear that the role of London in our country's economic growth and our cultural capacity is key. And so I'm really glad to be taking on the role to be able to, like you say, not just hold Sadiq Khan to account, which will be a large part of it, but obviously not possible in Parliament, but across all the departments that are going to be critical to getting a better deal for Londoners and to solve a lot of the issues that that Labour have inherited from the previous Conservative government.
Thank you. Well, you've inherited a fair few issues in your own constituency. So let's go on to NHS and social care. You've recently visited St Raphael's Hospice. They have a £1 million funding shortfall. How do you propose to go to government and help this shortfall? And not just for St Raphael's, there's lots of care situations, social care. We're desperately short of social care, which is why our hospital beds are so full, because people are sitting, taking up hospital beds when they should be back in the community.
Well, and it's worse for the patients, worse for our residents if they are stuck in hospitals. You are much more likely to get infections. You're much more likely to lose your independence if you're stuck in hospital. And these patients, they want to be at home. They want to be cared for by their loved ones. And you're exactly right that does then put pressure on the hospitals to continue to care for people who could be out in their own homes. You start off by talking about St Raphael's, in Cheam.
Yeah.
So we visited there last week. We had a really emotional tour through, and we saw so many local residents who are being cared for so sensitively by the team there. Since long before becoming an MP, I was very aware of how important St Raph's was to the local community. And that's what you get from having a hospice sector that are funded part by fundraising and part by the NHS. And hospices, I think, are very keen on that model because it means that they have that connection with local residents. It means they have that, they're properly embedded in the community. They do their sports days, they do fundraising, they do really novel events on the high street. I think a couple of weeks ago, we were walking down the high street and they had some static bikes set up, and they were having a cycling race between police and fire teams around London, seeing who ride fastest and furthest. And it was getting people involved. It was getting people coming up to the stand and talking to them about the work they did in the community. So that community funding is really important. But what's happened with St Raphs is their costs have increased so much over the last 4 years, particularly over COVID, that their funding from the NHS just hasn't kept up. So they say that their proportion of funding they get from the NHS is much lower than other hospices in London and around the country. And they say that's not fair. They say that residents served by St Raph, so that's across Merton, Sutton, and a tiny little bit of Wandsworth, Those residents deserve the amount of funding that other people in other parts of the country get. And what we don't want to see, and it sounds like a real cliche because we use it all the time, but we don't want to see a postcode lottery for care. We want people to be able to get access to the highest quality care, no matter where you live, whether that is in London, whether that is in, out in Surrey or in rural parts of the country. It's not fair that people's life chances, whether it's in for hospice care or whether it's for education, are defined by where you live. So our call for the NHS, specifically around St Raph's, is that they provide them with a fair share of funding compared to their neighbours, so that residents in our area aren't going to be let down when it comes to that most vulnerable part of their lives, where they're making choices about, how they might be ending their time here.
Yeah, well, end-of-life care is so important for the person who's going through end-of-life care and their families. So
Absolutely.
hospices like St Raph's are absolutely invaluable.
They really are, and they do such brilliant work. And the staff there really have an absolute passion for local residents. And we've had a friend of ours, a friend of the Lib Dems here in Sutton, passed away recently. Again, had been cared for by St Raph's in the last weeks of her life, and it was really touching to hear her family at the funeral talk about the level of care that they'd received and how much it meant to them. So we are really acutely aware of how important it is to local residents.
And are you going to lobby for that in Parliament?
Absolutely, we are, and it's not just in Parliament. It's sitting down with the local NHS, the ICB, the care boards who decide the funding, and just try and get to the bottom of how this disparity has happened. I'm not the type of person who, stands up and makes speeches and then leaves it there. I want to work out the detail of how we've ended up where we are, and try and come up with a solution that everybody can agree with.
Yeah. Moving on, hospitals. Two hospital sagas going on in the constituency. The
Hefty.
hospital plan for the new hospital plan that seems to have been put on the back burner. Now I think they're saying they want to hold off on planning for the new hospital and they're pushing back the date to I think 2030. What have you got to say
Wow.
about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredibly, again, it's one of these issues where we have this postcode lottery. Depending on where you live, you may have access to a brand new shiny hospital with incredibly well laid out wards, with staff who come to work in a beautifully new facility and they're really excited to get to work. Or you might have the situation where we do in Sutton and across a lot of Merton, where you have St Helier Hospital, where the buildings are falling down, the wards are really struggling to deal with the demand. Staff, naturally aren't, always that excited about coming into a building that is falling around their ears. So for years we've said that we need investment in healthcare, investment in a new hospital in the St Helier Epsom and St Helier Trust. So what we are concerned about is, with the review of the new hospitals programme by the government, that confirmed funding for a new hospital in the trust may be put at risk. So what we want to see is the health secretary confirm that the new hospital funding will go ahead, so that we don't get put to the back of the queue, we don't have to deal with more years of uncertainty for local residents, and that local staff will have the confidence that they will be able to, not just go to work, but also care for their residents who, they really have a massive connection to. They want to see people get better, but it's made so much more difficult when you're doing it under conditions where genuinely you don't know whether the lift you're getting into, you're going to be able to get out of the bottom end because it'll have failed. Or you don't know whether the water leak that had to close a particular ward the day before has been fixed, or whether you're having to move to a whole new area. It's just not good enough. We can't deal with this uncertainty. We need the health secretary to confirm that the new funding for the hospital for the new funding will go ahead, and we can get on with securing healthcare for local residents.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Royal Marsden, children's paediatric ward, they're trying to close it. I think they've estimated the costs of moving the services from St George's and the Royal Marsden to the Evelina for £40 million. It's sitting in the Lords, it's under scrutiny, it had cross-party condemnation. In fact, it just recently has come through that the Royal Marsden itself, the children's unit, is taking part in a trial called the Atticus Network of Stem Transplant Centres. This seems a ludicrous plan to spend all that money on a system that's not broke. It doesn't need fixing. What do you think?
Well, it is a difficult one, this. So the main issue is around having children's cancer care in a hospital, the Marsden, who do absolutely world-leading care. And it's incredibly impressive the amount of work they do. We are known as a world centre for cancer care and for children's cancer care. The challenge is because they don't have a children's intensive care unit on site, if children have issues whilst they're having treatment, they then have to be blue lighted to another hospital that has that children's intensive care. And at the moment, that's St George's. So at the moment, there are cases where children become sick, become unwell whilst they're undergoing treatment, and they then have to be transferred. Now, it doesn't happen a lot, and the NHS has...
Three times last year, that's all.
Yeah. So there are systems in place to deal with it when that happens. But I've had a number of meetings around this, and I personally am convinced by the NHS's argument that they should relocate services where there is a children's intensive care facility. So I am supportive of that move to ensure that that model where you have the children's cancer care services alongside a children's intensive care unit, I'm supportive of that move because I think that makes sense. The NHS explained that this is the only place in Europe, I think, that you have that separation where you don't have that children's intensive care unit.
It's now, not. The one in Paris is the same. There's another one in Europe. That's what they're saying.
So broadly, I'm supportive of the plans. But what we really need to do is be careful about where that service is relocated to. So the two options that were considered were St George's and the Evelina. I know that a lot of my colleagues have made it very, very clear that they believe that St George's is the best option for that. I'm not entirely sure that I can give a location for my preference, because I think that's down to the NHS to give the expert the medical advice on where they feel that children will have the best chance to receive the best care. And I think both the sites, St George's and Evelina, are incredibly impressive options. They've got incredible cancer research facilities in both. I think both would be a brilliant alternative to the Marsden site. What my focus is on making sure that the process, the consultation, was conducted properly, that all the appropriate voices were heard, and that the plans for both are viable. You know, we don't want to be looking at a scenario where we move cancer services and then either funding isn't available or that the level of care isn't what was promised. So my focus, and I do support the call in of the decision, because what that allows us to do is really look at the way the decision was made, but also look at the decision in its entirety, whether it is still the right thing to do. And I think that the best people to make those decisions are the NHS rather than politicians like myself. I know my place, I guess.
Okay, indeed. Hammersmith Bridge. There's been a new task force set up for Hammersmith Bridge. As spokesperson for London, are you going to be on that task force?
Now, look, I've worked as an engineer for 16 years. And I actually used to work, my office where I collected my belongings yesterday from my desk is at the end of Hammersmith Bridge in Lyric Square. So I used to cycle from Sutton to Hammersmith every day, or three times a week, I should say. And so I know the area very, very well. Now, look, the Hammersmith Bridge saga has been going on for too long. We need confirmation on where the funding is going to come from to solve the issue. We need the government to come back to the table. I think this has to be a Department of Transport project. But what it shows is how long our infrastructure in London has been underinvested, hasn't been looked after. So there hasn't been that long-term view. I know that there's, and I wouldn't say arguments, I would say disagreements between London boroughs about who's responsible for maintenance, who's responsible for upgrade works to bridges. And they've kind of fallen in between responsibilities. And that's why we've ended up in this situation. Now, I don't want to blame individuals or particular councils, but what we now have to do is have the government come to the table to help with that. And so, like I said, I would love to be on there as an engineer. I would love to be on there as an active travel campaigner, as a London resident, because I know it's really important to the residents on both sides that we get that reopened, that we get traffic flowing and people able to access the communities on the other side, because it has come between people who access services on either side of the bridge. So there are two things specifically. We need the bridge to reopen to, or continue to be open to, pedestrian cyclists throughout all works. And we need long-term certainty for that thing to happen. Now, I'm not going to say I have to be on that task force. Like I said, I'd love to be. But for me, that needs to be local representatives. So it needs to be councillors. It needs to be GLA members and MPs on either side of the bridge. It needs to be transport experts, of which I could put in a hand in a fairly fairly hefty CV. But it needs to be people who have a solution and who have the drive to come up with a long-term solution in mind. And that's the critical thing for me.
Will you have a chance to be an observer in any of their meetings?
It's very early days, but as politicians, we get all these emails through our inboxes, and some of them are things that we have no knowledge in. No, and I'm not going to say we don't have any interest in them, but you know, there might not be a local relevance. This is one where, as soon as it comes into my inbox, I'll send it to my chief of staff and say, I'd like to keep an eye on that. I'd like to get involved in that. And she'll say, no, it's nothing to do with you. It's too far away. And I'll keep pushing back, saying, no, actually, that's something I want to look at. So that's something that I will have a particular interest in. And I think that with a bit of vision, with a bit of ambition, we can come up with a solution that doesn't have these ridiculous long timetables that we've been talking about, but really critically takes local people's views into account on what that solution is.
Well, let's hope we're still not having this conversation in 3 or 4 years' time.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Thames Water, lots going on there. The governor put it into special measures. Do you think that's enough?
I don't think they've fix the big problem that the Lib Dems talked about throughout the election, which was giving the regulator teeth to really make the water companies change their behaviour. Because it's not just Thames Water. Obviously, for London and for Sutton and Cheam, for sewage, it definitely is Thames Water. We also have our water supplied by SES. So we've got issues around with a different stakeholder there. But for sewage in our rivers, it is Thames Water's responsibility to stop that from happening. I don't think them just being a special measure will fix it. We need Ofwat or a reform regulator to really properly fine the firms for not complying with their responsibilities towards us. Our solution was to turn them into public benefit companies. That then gives them a real key stake in their local areas, and a proper understanding of what local residents want from a company. And I think that's really the way forward. I think we've got to look at infrastructure. Like, as an engineer, a lot of my solutions to problems are infrastructure. I'm really excited. I'm going to be visiting the Thames Tideway Tunnel. I think it's next week, to see one of the sites there that's going to be diverting sewage from a lot of the outflows that we previously saw pouring into the Thames, and diverting that to a sewage treatment works. So, you know, that's a really good example of a big infrastructure project that we had ambition for, that was funded by the private sector, by pension funds that are going to take, I think it's, you know, 100 years worth of, you know, 50, like a couple of pounds off your bill every year, to provide this incredibly impactful infrastructure solution. And that, I think, is what we need to see more of: big solutions to problems like sewage in our rivers. And I don't think you will see that under privately owned water companies like Thames Water, where every year we see money being leached off to overseas investors, feathering their beds, providing benefit for residents. And not that there's anything wrong with the residents of other countries, but I think we should be seeing those benefits here and not being forced to pay the cost of my children, who love going to Beddington Park and playing in the river there, paddling around and playing with the rocks. But they can't at the moment, not only because it's pouring with rain, but because for the next week or so, we will be dealing with the results of the outflows from the Beddington sewage works. And that's just not okay.
And obviously, with the climate that we're having now, we seem to be getting more and more rain. Therefore, there are going to be more and more overflows. And this problem is just going to get worse. And as you say, you know, the money of these companies are owned by people who live in other countries like Spain and Italy and Canada. They have no idea the impact of what's happening in the UK, do they?
Exactly. And they're wonderful people. And, you know, they, you know, the system we have means that that's how we mobilise investment. And it's interesting, because it's a similar situation to how the Tideway Tunnel was funded. That's taken massive investment by big pension investors from around the world that provided the capital to deliver that infrastructure. They then take a small amount, or the company, Thames Tideway Tunnel, takes a small amount for bills every month for a long period, and it provides the payback for that investment. But the way that Thames Water is setting up is it's using accounting methods to move assets to sell off assets and load it up with debt, which then impacts our residents because they then can't afford to invest in the infrastructure that we need. And like you say, it's not fair, and it's not how critical infrastructure should be delivered, and it's not how water companies should operate. And I think, you know, we are really committed to the public benefit idea. You know, we don't support nationalism. We don't think nationalisation is reflexively the right answer. But I think that the public benefit company structure gives you the protections that local residents would need to ensure that their money, their bills, their taxes, in some cases, go to infrastructure that improves their areas and allows them to enjoy what we used to be able to do, which was swimming on the beach and walking in our rivers, which we can't do anymore.
Thank you, Luke. It's been very interesting. I'll wind it up now. Just one little question. You're obviously going to be very busy in your role as spokesperson for London, and I'm sure we have lots of other catch-ups and talk about your role. As your role develops, am I talking to the next Liberal Democrat candidate for Mayor of London in a few years' time?
Hopefully not. My commitment is absolutely to the people of Sutton and Cheam. I know my predecessor as MP for Sutton and Cheam, Paul Scully, who was a good local MP. He was a good man. I have a lot of respect for him. He fell out with his party and I think disenfranchised. He fell out of love with politics over an argument around the Mayor of London candidacy. So I think I will say no on the point that might well lead to my love of politics being lost. So I'd like to rule myself out as early as I possibly can.
So I can take that as a definite no then, can I?
I think so for now.
At this stage. Luke, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for coming on to Radio Jackie. Let's talk again. And thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jackie. Have a lovely afternoon.
And you. Take care. Bye for now. Yeah.